Peak session number 10751, Reel 1.
Mr. Briggs, Reel 1, how did you come to be in the Navy, please?
Well, I was born in Redcar in Yorkshire, and I always did have an interest in the sea. And it was in about 1935 that the hood came off the mouth of the River Tees, and the Redcar fishermen were charging five bob a time to row people round the ship. And I badly wanted to go around there, but my mother couldn't afford the five bob. So I think that was when I first got the idea that I wanted to join the Navy. And I was 15 on the 1st of March, 38, and I joined on the 7th of March.
Did you catch a glimpse of the hood at that time?
Yes, yes.
What kind of impression did she make on you?
Well, this was what inspired me that I wanted to join the Navy. I'd never seen anything quite so powerful and beautiful. Beautiful for a battleship sounds an awful word, but there was no other way to describe her.
Was she a beautiful ship?
Yes, yes, she was. She was unique. There were three battle cruisers built. Hood, Repulse and Renown. And of the three, Hood was the mightiest. She had four 15-inch turrets, and she was the better-looking of all three.
Why was she so good-looking?
I don't know. I think the reputation that she got of being the most powerful warship afloat and the epitome of British sea power, and she's recognised throughout the world as the most powerful warship afloat. I think that had a lot, and the grace of her lines, etc., also had a lot to do with it.
What did she look like when she was going at full speed?
When she was going at full speed, her quarterdeck was virtually underwater. That the wash came up either side of the quarterdeck.
Was it easy to get into the Navy?
Yes, in those days it was very easy. You had to do a so-called examination, but if you could read, write, and spell, you were in.
Where exactly did you have your basic training?
At HMS Ganges, which was Shotley, near Ipswich.
How did you take to it?
At first, I thought it was a little bit harsh, but you soon got used to it, and by and large, I quite enjoyed it.
How were you treated on Ganges?
Very, very strict. Very strict indeed. You were not allowed to smoke, of course, and you were only allowed out one half day a week, apart from your normal leave. The pay in those days was 5 and 3 pence a week, old money, as a second class boy, and 8 and 9 pence a week as a first class boy, of which you got a shilling a week pocket money, the main was put in the bank for you, and 1 and 6 pence a week as a first class boy. The other you didn't get until you were 18.
Did the boys feel they were treated fairly, or did they have grievances?
They resented some of the discipline, but by and large, it was a very fair organisation.
Did you specialise in any branch of the naval work, or were
yes.
you just a seaman?
I joined as a seaman, but you made your mind up during the first 15 weeks what you wanted to be, and I decided on visual signalling.
What did that involve in those days?
Well, it was basically flashing, semaphore, Morse flag, and flag signalling.
What was the first ship that you actually joined?
The first ship was Hood, which was much, much to my surprise and much to my delight.
Was that the ship that you would have preferred above all others?
That was the ship I wanted, yes.
So you were extremely lucky, really?
I was, yes.
What was it like actually being aboard the Hood once you got to it?
Well, it was something entirely different from training. You were treated more as one of the ship's company rather than a trainee, although the discipline was still there. It was a bit more relaxed.
What was the crew like there? What were the relationships between the crew like?
Well, as boys, we had our own mess deck, and you were kept segregated as much as possible within the confines of the ship. Relationships were pretty good. The older personnel treated you with a rather amused tolerance to a certain extent.
What were the relationships like between the men and the officers?
Good, very good.
Do any officers stand out in your mind who were part of the personnel?
Well, only the senior ones, the captain, the commander, and our own divisional officers.
Did you see much of the officers, or was it mainly petty officers who were in charge of it?
Oh, mainly petty officers, and the leading seamen were the ones we had most to do with. I mean, an officer was God Almighty as far as we were concerned. So was a chief, for that matter, or a petty officer, but...
Were the officers called pigs in those days?
No.
Because one hears that term has been used in the Navy at various
times. It's been used in the Navy through, well, I suppose, since the days of the old wooden walls, virtually, but I very seldom heard the expression.
What were you doing when Chamberlain made his announcement that we were at war with Germany?
Well, the fleet were gathering, were being placed on a war footing anyway. And we had, Hood had finished her refit in Portsmouth. And I joined her in the June, just as she was completing the, June 39, just as she was completing the refit. And we sailed from Portsmouth for Scapa Flow, where the home fleet was mustering. And from there, at the beginning of September, the home fleet sailed, and we were actually at sea, in the North Sea, when the declaration of war was made. I think the object was that we were at sea, so that in the event of any war being declared, we could make any surprise attack that was necessary, or repel any other attack.
How exactly did the news come to you that we were at war?
It came... The first I knew was the captain broadcast that we were at war, and we were the flagship of the ships at sea, and we made the general signal to the fleet, commence hostilities against Germany. And I had, well, that one of the jobs I had was making that by semaphore from the director of the Hood, main director.
What did you and your shipmates feel about the prospects of the Royal Navy against the German Navy in the coming war? Did you feel confident?
Oh, yes, indeed. As far as we were concerned, the German fleet, compared to ours at that time, was numerically very inferior, and we believed and understood that from a readiness point of view they were also inferior.
Did you know that the Germans were constructing big battleships like the Tirpitz and the Bismarck?
We knew that the Tirpitz and Bismarck were under construction, and we knew that they had the two battle cruisers Scharnhorst and Gneisenau, and the three pocket battleships Deutschland, Graf Spee and Admiral Speer. What we didn't know was the size of the Bismarck and Tirpitz, which were, under the Geneva Convention, only supposed to be 35,000 tons, whereas in actual fact, Bismarck turned out, and Pinzweig, and Tirpitz turned out to be 50,000 tons.
We haven't said anything about what Hood was like to live aboard from the point of view of comforts.
Very crowded. The wartime ship's company was 1,421. And as I say, it was pretty crowded. But the main problem was sleeping billets. There were, of course, in those days you slept in a hammock. But there were not enough slinging billets for everyone to sling the hammock, so you slept where you could if you couldn't get a slinging billet, either on the mess deck tables or under the tables, on the deck, anywhere you could.
Was there any kind of infestation aboard from the point of view of vermin, cockroaches or rats?
Very little, mainly cockroaches, but not all that.
When war was declared, did you expect to go into action immediately, or...?
Yes, most of our early time was spent with covering convoys. At any one time you had quite a number of convoys at sea, and they had their own anti-submarine escort, which was not big enough to protect them altogether. So the capital ships were stationed between the various convoys so that they were in a position to go to assist any convoy that came under attack. The first real action that we saw was very shortly after the commencement of war, when the submarine Spearfish was damaged, and the Home Fleet, the Commander-in-Chief, decided that he would take the whole of the Home Fleet to sea to escort the Spearfish back in the hope of tempting the German fleet to come out. The German fleet didn't come out, but the German Air Force did. And this was when Arkroyal and Hood were both singled out for the major attacks. And Arkroyal, she was consistently had very, very near misses. I think that was the first time that they claimed that they'd actually sunk her. And they also claimed that they'd sunk Hood. This was Lord Haw. They got a very, very near miss on Hood, which peppered the port boom and the port side of the ship with shrapnel. But that was the only damage that occurred.
What did you see of the air attack?
Well, we saw the aircraft coming over, and I actually watched the Heinkel that dived on us. It really didn't register what was happening, and I saw this black object leave the aircraft, and it still didn't register. Not until the thing exploded practically alongside, and then I suddenly realised what it was. But and after that, that was when it started. My God, it could have caused damage and what have you.
Where were you exactly on the ship?
On the flag deck.
That was your normal station?
That was the normal station at that time.
What was the approximate date of escorting the Spearfish?
It was about the third week in September, I think it was. I can't think of the exact date now, but it was in the very early days.
Where were most of the convoys that you were escorting?
They were coming backwards and forwards between Canada and UK and America and UK.
What was it like doing this kind of convoy work? Was it routine and boring?
Very boring. You went to dawn and dusk action stations day in and day out. And nine times out of ten, you were just patrolling up and down, up and down. You never, virtually never saw anything.
What was the attitude of a young man like yourself doing that kind of work? Did you feel, well, this is all right, or did you feel it's about time we had some action?
Frustrated. Frustrated, you see. You heard all the other things that were happening, and you felt you were being left out.
What kind of news were you getting which struck you?
Of ships being, merchant ships mainly being sunk, and of submarine actions and destroyers being damaged, and other ships being torpedoed and what have you, but nothing ever seemed to happen as far as we were concerned.
What was the next incident that sticks out in your mind from your war experience?
Well, in 1940, when France collapsed, Hood was detached to join the a new force that was being made up, Force H, at Gibraltar. And that consisted of Hood as the flagship, flying the flag of Vice Admiral Somerville, Ark Royal, Resolution, and Valiant, Arethusa, Enterprise, and 11 destroyers. And I say that formed up at Gibraltar. And it was shortly after that, in June 1940, June the 6th, I think it was, that Force H was ordered to Oran, where the French fleet were gathered. And the British government had, were a bit concerned that they might be forced to join the German forces or been taken over by the German forces. So Force H was sent to talk to the French. They were given three options: either to join us, or to sail under escort to a neutral port where they would be interned, or finally to scuttle the ships where they were. And the only other alternative to that was we would have to engage them to prevent them falling into enemy hands. We patrolled up and down outside Oran all day. We got there at about 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was patrolling up and down. Nobody wanted this, and the admiral, you could tell, was very, very against it. Nobody really wanted it. But in the finish, we were ordered by, I think it was Churchill himself, because of the fact that they were frightened of submarines coming up, being alerted to coming up, that we had to give the final ultimatum. And it was about 6 o'clock that evening when we actually opened fire. And it was a slaughter, virtually. They didn't stand a hope. They were all in harbour. Although they did try to raise steam to come out. Strasbourg did get out, and we were detached with two cruisers and the two cruisers and five of the destroyers to try and overtake her. We didn't manage to do it, but what actually happened was there was a French-like cruiser that had come out, and this suddenly appeared on the screen, making straight for Hood, and she actually fired torpedoes at us. We turned to comb the torpedo tracks, and we hit her with one of our salvos and virtually blew her out of the water. That was one of the thing, major thing that I remember there.
Did you see the French cruiser go up?
Yes, yes.
What did it look like?
It's just this, pretty much the same as Hood must have looked when she went up. It's just a whacking great explosion, and there was nothing left.
Some people seem to think it's strange that the Strasbourg should have escaped.
Yes and no. We were up and down all day, and they were obviously raising steam. They were obviously trying to get out. And I think it was probably due to a mistake on our part that she finally did get out, but how, I don't know. Again, I was on the flag deck at the time. I wasn't in a position to really understand what was going on, as I was with the Bismarck effort.
What can you see from the flag deck?
The flag deck, you can see you've got an all-round view of the ships in the area and what have you, and we could actually see into Oran itself, and we could see the shells being fired at us. In fact, one of the ships that were firing at us must have had something wrong with the rifling of the barrel, because the shells were coming end for end. And the other thing was that the French had got a means of assessing their fall of shot by a different coloured smoke from the burst of, from shell bursts. So you could see orange, blue, yellow, red, and that was a form of a firework display virtually.
Was it at all frightening or just exciting?
It wasn't frightening as far as we were concerned, because it was virtually like shooting fish in a barrel.
What was the mood on board the ship after the action?
Very melancholy. Very melancholy. It left a nasty taste. No, there wasn't a soul on board that wanted to do it. But it was a question of, it was something that had to be done.
What are your next memories in the war?
Well, after that we came back, and Renown took over the flag of Vice Admiral Somerville, and we came back to Scapa Flow and rehoisted the flag of Vice Admiral Whitworth, and we had then two or three chases after the Royal Pindi was sunk by a pocket battleship, and we were believed to be the Deutschland, and we were sent out to try to find them. We couldn't do so. We also the Scharnhorst and Neisenau had broken out into the Atlantic, and we were sent out trying to chase them. They escaped into Brest, and we spent quite a lot of time patrolling up and down outside Brest. There was a constant blockade on Brest of a capital ship and a cruiser with destroyers in case the Scharnhorst and Eisenhower came out. And we spent quite a lot of time doing that, which again was a very boring effort. And then the next thing was in 41, in May 41, when we heard that Bismarck had completed her trials and had come out of the Baltic and was traced by the Norwegian underground and reported to be heading for a Norwegian port. The commander-in-chief decided that she was obviously going to try to break out into the Atlantic, where there were quite a large number of convoys shunting backwards and forwards at the time. And he decided the best thing to do was to split the home fleet up. And he and King George V stayed at Scapa Flow to cover the area south of Iceland. And Hood, Prince of Wales, and six destroyers were detached to go to Hvalfjord in Iceland to cover the Denmark Strait and the area immediately south of Iceland, which was the most likely place for the German ships to break out. Meanwhile, the RAF had sighted Bismarck in Bergen with a heavy class cruiser. They weren't quite sure which cruiser it was. And we were at that time, we'd sailed from Scapa Flow at midnight on the 21st of May, and we were at that time on the way to Hvalfjord. Visibility had closed down, and they couldn't, the aircraft couldn't keep contact. So there was a flying boat from from Scapo that went out to try to see what they could see, and they practically wave hopped across, and he headed north of Bergen, so he knew when he hit the Norwegian coast all he had to do was come south, and there was sooner or later he was bound to come across the area at a very low height. When he got to Bergen, he found that the Bergen was empty, the ships had sailed. And then we had just about got to we were just about to enter Harfield when the cruisers Norfolk and Suffolk, or Suffolk mate first of all, who were patrolling up and down what we called an A to K line. It was a line of cruisers which patrolled up and down the areas where the ships were likely to break out as a first stop. And Suffolk sighted Bismarck and this heavy cruiser and reported into Admiralty. We intercepted the enemy reports coming in over the radio, and the Admiral ordered complete radio silence as far as we were concerned, apart from the interception. And we turned to intercept the two ships. At the course and speed that they were doing, it was estimated that we would be in a position to engage at 2 o'clock in the morning of the 24th of May. Bismarck realised that she had been sighted by the Suffolk, but she wasn't particularly concerned because she knew that jolly well that she could soon chase them. Meanwhile, Suffolk had been joined by Norfolk, Rear Admiral Wake Walker, who again stationed themselves on either quarter of the enemy ships and carried on reporting their movements, their alterations, of course, any speed alterations, that type of thing. And Bismarck then decided she would try to chase the ships off. So she turned round, came straight in at them and opened fire. Of course, the Norfolk and Suffolk pretty soon rapidly turned tail and to get out of it. Now, they were had radar, which in those days was very much in its infancy and could only scan forward. So consequently, they lost contact. And by the time Bismarck had resumed course, they turned back, but they'd lost contact. And Admiral Holland in Hood made the mistake of assuming that Bismarck had realised that she'd been located and had turned back.